On this episode of Broken Internet Radio, titled Family Anecdotes, we're going to hear some stories from six different people, all my grandparents. Some will be funny, some will be kind of scary, actually, but they will all be very interesting. I hope you enjoy. The first story you'll hear is from Irene Peary Fox, my grandmother on my mom's side. She is an incredible pianist, and this is what she told me when I asked for an embarrassing family story.
A cellist and we were a piano quartet, so we traveled around doing concerts quite a bit, and we were asked to give one on Temple Square. So we went and gave a concert in the Assembly Hall at Temple Square. And after the concert, we all decided to go across the street and get something to eat together as a faculty. And I had taken my children with me, Samuel and Christy, I think it was. And it was a really sophisticated group. And we were talking, and I try to be my best at those events. Not that I'm not always, but Samuel just decided that he was going to tell a joke.
And Samuel is my uncle, and Christy is my mom.
Right, and so this is my youngest son. And when he said, oh, does anybody want to hear a joke? I thought, oh, no, this is not going to be good. I don't want him telling jokes. This is not the kind of group, the kind of party for a joke like that. Any kind of joke. This is not the setting. And so everybody, oh, sure. And so he said, what begins with F and ends with K? And everybody just went silent and stopped eating and looked at me.
I think I've heard this one.
And all of a sudden he said, fire truck.
And just totally sincere.
Yes.
Like he wouldn't have been able to think of any other word than fire truck.
Right. I can remember the sense of relief that it wasn't the other four-letter word.
That is awesome. Did my mom, because she's a year older than him, when he said that, did she know what was happening?
Everybody broke out into laughter. It was just hysterical. It was really funny, and so I'm sure she did too.
Because it's like, you're laughing in relief. That is a close call.
Close call is right.
All right, well, thank you so much for sharing that story, Grandma. That's
awesome.
Can you believe that? It's crazy. After I heard that story, I actually got some news outside of the recording that my uncle didn't just say F starts with an F, ends with a K. He said starts with an F, ends with UCK. It was even worse than that. This next story is told by my grandfather, Angus Cannon Fox, married to Irene Peary Fox. You won't believe me at first, but I promise you that it is true. Grandpa, take it away.
In 1964, well, it was in the early summer of 1964, Chris's father, Adrian Cannon, decided that they were going to ride their bicycles from their home city of North Hollywood, California, a city in right next to Hollywood in Southern California, all the way, they were going to ride their bicycles all the way to the New York World's Fair, the 1964 New York World's Fair.
The entire country.
Yeah, they ran across the entire country. Anyway, they took off, and they, I can't remember the route they took, but they had to climb a number of mountain ranges. And they made it to they made it beyond Colorado finally. And first of all, they had to cross the Sierra Nevada range, and then they had to cross the Rocky Range, and then it was a big long flat area from Colorado all the way to Detroit.
How long did this all take? Like,
I'd have to ask him, but I think it took them about a month to ride their bikes to the New York World's Fair.
That's insane.
They finally got to New York. I think all in all, it took about a month, maybe a little longer. After the fair was over, Adrian made an admission to the boys. He said, "I don't have enough money to get us all back, so David and I are going to take the plane." There were four brothers. There were three brothers. There was Joseph, the oldest. There was Chris, the second oldest. And there was David, who was the youngest. And David and Adrian took the plane back, and Chris and Joe got to hitchhike.
And Chris and Joe were how old?
Chris was 13. Joe was 14. Joe is my age. So they started riding their bikes. I'm sorry. They started hitchhiking. Their bikes got shipped home. And so here they were thumbing a ride for hours, and no one would pick them up. Just a 13 and 14 year old boy. I mean, nothing very dangerous, right? But still, no one would pick them up. Finally, this 1957 Chevrolet went screaming by, and all of a sudden, the driver applied his brakes and screeched to a halt. Threw it into reverse, backed up, and the guy riding shotgun rolled down his window, and he said, "Where are you going?" And they said, "Southern California." They said, "So are we. Jump in." So they jumped into the back of this Chevy two-door hardtop, and there were three guys in the front, and they were sharing the back seat with a lot of cases of beer. So the guys in the front seat were swigging beer most of the way, and periodically the guy riding shotgun would reach over and slap the driver in the face and tell him to slow down because he was going too fast and didn't want to get pulled over. Anyway, this went on for a day or two, and they treated Chris and Joe very well. They treated them to a very nice dinner and several times. And along the way, they were listening to music from the 60s, rock and roll music from the 60s. Well, they finally got to Cedar City, Utah, and the guy was driving pretty slowly, and the guy riding shotgun said, "Slow down! There's a cop right behind us." And everyone seemed to start to panic, and Chris and Joe, of course, didn't know why, but the police car put the siren on and the lights and pulled the Chevy over to the side of the road, and the policeman drew his gun and had everybody get out and put their hands on top of the car, Chris and Joe included. Well, it turns out that just before they had picked up Chris and Joe, they had knocked off a service station, killed the attendant, cleaned out the till, and stolen all the beer.
From a gas station.
From the gas station. So these guys were eventually tried and went to prison for life, and Chris and Joe were sent home on the bus.
This next story is going to be told by my grandfather on my dad's side, Orville Skousen.
Okay, well, the story I'm going to tell was when I was a second grader and a magician, a great magician. And what I did, I would take these quarter-inch round tapioca balls, and I would put one in each ear, and then I would have some in my pocket. And I would go to school, and I would show the kids how I could chew up a tapioca ball and pull it out of my ear. And that really confused people. They couldn't figure out how I could be such a great magician until one day I couldn't get one out of my ear. And my mother had to take me to the doctor to get it out. And that put an end to my being a magician.
So how far did you stick them in?
Just far enough that I could grab them and pull them out.
That's hilarious. And you were in second grade?
Yes.
So you must have been like 7. You're like, "I've got this great idea."
I was 7.
That's hilarious. Now for a couple of stories about fire on the farm. Here's my Grandma Vonda Skousen, married to Orville Skousen. Take it away, Grandma.
When I was in the 5th grade, my cousin came to visit, and we did a lot together, and we decided to go over across the street to a farm worker's house that was empty. And we were going to think about seeing if we could smoke some wheat stalks. And we were doing that when all of a sudden we heard a fire engine. And we ran out of this little shack, and it was my family's fire haystack that was on fire. We felt like it was our fault because we were doing naughty things. We ran home, and there was a fire engine, and you cannot put out a haystack real quickly. It almost has to burn out, and it takes a long time. Mom and Dad were in Utah, and a cousin was taking care of us. Then it went from the haystack to the corral. And in the corral, that's where the horses and the cows are, the manure burns slowly and long. So finished burning all that day. That night we looked out and it was still glowing, burning. Next day, burning. Next day Mom and Dad were due home. And that thing was still burning, just the embers, by the time they got home. The interesting thing about that was Dad had worried about the haystack catching fire. I did not know about combustion at that time. But if you put up the hay before it has time to dry enough, it gets hot. And it gets hot enough to start a fire inside of a haystack.
Just on its own?
On its own. I did not believe that until I started mowing the lawn and putting trimmings from a lawn into a barrel, a closed area. And if you put your hand inside that wet green material, you will feel how hot it gets. But it will combust and just break into a fire.
Like how compost is always warm. And just the whole time you thought that the fire was your fault.
And then when I decided it wasn't our fault, I thought, oh, it's my brother's fault. He did it. He went out and started it.
You just could not believe.
No. One other thing about fire on the farm, we used to burn the stubble. That's what's left in the field after they cut off the grain. And it's about a foot tall, maybe 18 inches tall. Mm-hmm. And it's dry stems of the wheat. We'd seen this happen all our lives. And Mom, Dad, and some other men would be stationed around the perimeter of the field so that if it spread where it shouldn't, they could put it out. But all of a sudden, we heard the fire engine. And we thought, what in the world? What's happened? Well, somebody had driven by, had never seen a stubble field on fire, and called the fire department from a neighboring town. And I remember thinking, how dumb. Don't these city people know anything? What they were doing, they thought a plane had crashed and caught the field on fire.
Okay, I'm here at the scene with
You're a Parker.
Okay, you can start the story.
I am your grandfather.
Yes, you are.
So, your mom, she was about, a year and a half, maybe, two-ish, and she used to eat her crib. I've got the ends of it out in the garage. I'll show you.
Okay.
She still has her tooth mark. She used to gnaw on the crib. But before, and then Sam was born, and she moved into a big bed. And
she ate that.
She didn't eat it, but...
Good job, Mom.
She and her brother, in order to get ready to go to bed every night, would put on their pajamas and brush their teeth and get all ready. And then, as I was trying to get them settled down and calm and ready to go to bed, what they did every night, as a ritual,
was get on her bed and jump up and down and sing Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam. Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam. And work themselves into mass hysteria.
Because that just gets you right ready for just the sleeping mood. Her
bed. And then they would go to bed. So that's your mom's story. But she liked going to sleep. Uncle Joseph didn't like going to sleep. He always wanted to stay up late. He was always afraid that something fun was going on that he was missing out of. So he hated to go to bed. But about 7 o'clock or 7:30, your mom would say, "Please, Dad, can I go to bed now?" That was when she was older. But when she was young, she gnawed on her crib. And then after that, she jumped on her bed singing Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam as a nighttime story. Do you remember that, Christy?
No, I just remember hearing about it. I don't remember.
I thought, what have I done wrong?
Right.
But I had done nothing wrong. She grew up to be perfect.
That's true. All right. Thank you so much, Grandpa.
Yes, good. I am your grandfather.
All right. I'm here with my Grandma Leslie, and she's going to tell me a story.
She's not your grandfather. I'm your grandfather.
Okay.
When I was little, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4. My dad was a doctor, and he was on call all of the time, except Sunday mornings he was home. And my dad was kind of a grouchy sometimes, and he was tired. And my brother and I got up, went into the kitchen, and decided we wanted some Jell-O. You know, the packages of Jell-O, and we would just eat the Jell-O raw.
Oh, that's gross.
I know. But remember, I was just little. Okay. So my brother and I saying that.
Yeah.
We're eating it. And then I asked my mother if we could have some more. Why I did that, I don't know. But I was trying to be obedient. And my father's voice came out and it said, or my mom said, "No, I don't think so." And I said, "You are a..." And I said a really bad word, which I didn't know what it meant, but I'd heard it before. So I said it. And suddenly, these loud steps came out. And my father was there. And he picked me up and he started to spank me, which he had not done. And it, first of all, scared me. And I started to laugh because I didn't think he was serious, because I didn't know I had done anything wrong. And then I realized he wasn't joking. And this was very real. And that's when I learned, he explained to me as he was spanking me, what I had said. And not to say it ever again. And I don't say it very often.
In public.
In public. No, not even in private. I don't say that very often.
Okay.
Thank you, grandparents, for telling me all of those wonderful stories. That concludes this episode of Broken Internet Radio. I'm glad you dropped by, and hopefully you'll stick around to hear some of our other episodes. Have a good day.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.